From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Hope you guys had a great weekend. I hope you are enjoying the sunshine. I'll tell you what, this weather, I don't think I'm a person who has seasonal affective disorder or SAD, as is commonly known. But I know that whatever the happy version is when the sun comes out, I just lose my mind. I think it's mostly because I can send the kids outside, which makes me very happy. Matt Butler is out today. He's taking a well-deserved vacation day. I don't know what he's doing, but I hope he's having a good time. Max Strobel is filling in. Max, welcome to the show. Thanks for filling in, buddy.
It's good to be back.
Yeah, you were with me on my first week of shows.
Maiden voyage.
I know. And
we're almost to 100. You passed it, huh?
Something. I don't know. It's like 130 shows now. It's been 130 shows since we worked together. But welcome. Welcome. And I am excited because it is Monday, and I love Mondays. As you well know, it's my favorite day of the week. My audio would play. Do I have audio on my computer, Max? Let's try that again. Mondays are my favorite day of the week.
Behold, a fiendish masterpiece from the bowels of hell.
Yeah.
Mondays, boy, I hate Mondays. They make me be so steamed. Weekends, I prefer the weekends.
All right, so this weekend, I made the critical error of deciding on the first truly gorgeous weekend of the year. I decided it was a good idea to load my three kids, who are insane, up in the to my truck and to invite my pregnant wife to go for a very long drive. We went over to my in-laws' house. They live over by Port Townsend. And this was a mistake. This was a big mistake because we have to take the ferry boat. I always say ferry boat. People always text in on the text line. Don't say ferry boat. It's just a ferry. I call it a ferry boat, whatever. So we had to take the ferry over to Port Townsend area. In order to do that, we had to sit in just a little bit of traffic. So I normally take, when we go, like sometimes we'll drive up like way up north. I don't know the name of that one, but it's you like cross over Whidbey Island and, you know, Deception Pass and all that stuff. It's beautiful. The drive is beautiful, especially on a nice day. So that's not the worst thing in the world. The worst thing in the world is waiting in a line for a ferry boat. No fun. Especially in March. Like we went, what is today, the 18th? We went on the 16th, which is like very mid-March. There should be no ferry line like we were sitting in on Saturday. We had to sit in almost 3 hours each way, which again, three kids in the car, the hell that I was in. I cannot even tell you. I love my family. I love my kids. But there was about 10 times where I almost just like invited them to walk on. Like, go, you know what, guys, catch the boat ahead of us. Go ahead and walk on. Your mom and I are just going to take the truck. We'll meet you over there. But again, they're like very small, tiny children. I probably would have been arrested for that. Here was the fun thing, though. And I don't know if you've ever had this experience, Max. Max, do you take the ferry often? Do you find yourself waiting in those lines?
I have. I haven't taken it in years.
Okay, so you haven't experienced what they have become. Washington State Ferry System has a real problem going on right now. We've talked about this on the show many times. Under ideal conditions, I think they're supposed to have like 21 boats running. But right now, because some boats are old, like they're running some boats that are like 60 years old, which is, you know, it's a testament to how well those boats are built. But they need to order ahead. They need to think ahead a little bit. So those boats are not running. And so they are down to like, I think like on average, they're down to like, sometimes they're down to 13 to 14 boats, which is 2/3 of what they should have, which means that on certain runs, they have to, you know, the busier runs, they have to move boats and you only have one where you should have two. On other ones, you end up sitting in your car forever. And I know it's not their fault that I have kids. I totally understand that. But it is their fault that I'm waiting in the line for so long. And then this happened on Saturday. So we're sitting there in line. Anybody who's listening knows this experience. They like just inherently understand the feeling that I'm about to describe. And we're going to get to everything. We're going to get to the show. We have a lot of great clips and more than we're going to get to today. So just hold your horses. And we have a great trivia clip. We'll get to that in just a second. So Saturday, we're sitting in line. It's probably like 12:30-ish. We take the Edmonds-Kingston run. So we're on the Edmonds side, which means we're like, if you've ever driven into downtown Edmonds, you guys know there's only like kind of one way into downtown Edmonds, really. And it's a hill that goes way down the hill into Edmonds. It's like you pass all the shops and stuff. So we're waiting in the ferry line for that. And we're probably an hour and change in. And again, this is like an hour and change with three kids right behind me in the truck, which is like 10 hours. And so we're sitting there and just killing time. And this big something comes into my peripheral vision. And I look, and again, we're parked, the car's off, we're just chilling out. And I look over to the side, and there is a guy driving a U-Haul truck, like a big U-Haul truck. He has decided, I don't know how he identified me, maybe he just saw my friendly face, but he identified me as an idiot, a moron who would let him in. That's what he thinks. He doesn't understand. He doesn't know what's going on in my head, but he doesn't understand. But he parks next to me, and he sits there, and he doesn't look directly at me because I feel like he's a passive, because he's local and people in Seattle are weird, and so he's got like a passive-aggressive nature about him. So he's not actually looking at me, but he is trying to cheat me out of my spot in line. And I'm looking around like crazy. I'm looking around for they used to have these numbers posted everywhere. It's like in New York, they have these numbers that, like, if you see a terrorist, or a bag that's left behind, they say, like, if you see something, say something, be a hero. Those are on all the subways. They have those. And now in Washington, the only really thing comparable we have is the ferry boat line, where if somebody cuts in line, you're supposed to call a number. I don't see those anymore. Those numbers are not around anymore. And so I don't even know who I'm supposed to call. I'm looking for them. I'm scanning. I'm not like a tattletale, and I don't want people to, I don't want to raise my kids to be tattletales, but I also don't like injustice. I have a very strong sense that this is evil when somebody cuts in a ferry boat line. And I'm telling you, this guy had no clue what he was about to get into. And he's just sitting there and he's staring at, he's not really staring. He's like kind of like awkwardly looking ahead of my car as if he's trying to like on a wish board, just make it happen. And he's looking ahead and he's just waiting. And now traffic has started to build up behind him because, again, there's only one road going down into Edmonds.
He's getting deeper in the muck.
He's getting deeper. But I think he's made a calculated decision. In his head, he's made a calculated decision. I'm going to guilt this guy into letting me into the line.
The risk and the reward.
Yeah, there's a high risk, high reward, because he knows that there's like an hour and a half of line behind him and he's in a giant U-Haul truck. And I'm just sitting there and I'm just like, nope. Nope, nope. And my wife is like, are you going to let him in? Are you going to let him in? She doesn't want me to. She's like trying to, she thinks I'm going to give in, actually, which is like not great. But I was going to be strong. I was going to be vigilant. There was just no way this guy's getting in.
No, 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 no. Hell no.
And so then, it's from Cop Out. It's kind of funny. But then he does this, which I just, this is a little more aggressive. He's like, goes from passive aggressive, just sitting there, to a little more aggressive. He puts his, as if I couldn't figure out what he's trying to do, he puts his blinker on. And he's sitting there, and now we connect eyes. And I am just laser beams right back at him, like I'm staring at you right now, Max. He's not coming in. He is not coming in. I am resolute in this. This is not happening. And I'll tell you what. There's a lot of things about the world today that are tough. This is not one of those things. My life's pretty great. I understand that. This was like my tough story for the weekend that I was going to share with you guys. But I will tell you this. There is a bond that forms in two places. One that you will never forget. One, I don't know, because I was never in the armed services. I was never in the military. But I hear that when people are in war together, they have this bond. The other one is when you're waiting in line for a ferry in the Washington State ferry boat line and somebody tries to cut in front of you. Everyone else around you just gets in tighter. They're not letting him in. You guys are on a team now. And I'm not joking. Everyone was like exchanging eyes. We're rear view mirrors. We're looking at each other. People start yelling at this guy. Turn around, buddy. Somebody raises his arm out the window and shoots a finger up, not the middle finger, and he does like the, like round him up kind of thing, like turn it around. And this old guy in front of me, who actually the line kind of has split now at this point, the line has kind of split on the approach to the Edmonds terminal, the line eventually, on the hill it's one lane, and then when you get down lower it splits into two lanes. So I'm sitting there side by side with this old guy. And he's on the inside, I'm on the outside. This U-Haul is trying to like cut in front of me. And this old guy is sitting in his car, and God bless him, military guy. He's got his Navy hat on of whatever ship he served on. He's like one of those cool guys. Old man, like old, old man. And he's got an oxygen mask on. I mean, he's seen some things. And he rolls down his window and he sticks like this weathered old hand in the air. And he goes, turn it around. And he's like yelling at him through this oxygen mask. Everybody starts doing it, like 10, 15 people. We're all in this little cluster. We all start doing it. And then we watch as this guy's in the U-Haul, as this villain, as his spirit is broken. And he knows there's just like, it's not going to happen today for him. He's not getting in this line. We're not going to let him. I was so proud to be an American right there, which is, I don't know, totally relates. But I was very, very proud.
And he couldn't really risk too much because he's got a rental car. So he can't like force his way in and risk any damage.
No, he can't do that. But the other thing that he had done is he miscalculated that I was a fool and would let him in. And what he risked was the line has continued to build behind him for about 10 minutes. This is a 10-minute exchange. That's a long time for him just to sit there. The line has continued to build behind him. And he now, finally, he clicks it off. And I watch as he pulls ahead. He flips a U-ey and he starts heading back up the hill. And he like gives us a real evil glare. And me and the old man, we kind of look at each other. And again, like he's served in battle. I haven't. Like I don't serve in battle. So I respect him. I respect what he's done. And we look at each other and there's just like, there's this camaraderie that happens. And we have now won this little battle.
Yeah.
It felt, I'm telling you, I'm not trying to get emotional here.
There's like family by blood and then there's family by fairy line.
Yep. Exactly. Through experience. You get it, Max. Totally. We won that day. I sat in the car for 6 hours with my kids waiting on both sides, 3 hours each way. That was no fun. But I'm telling you, I got home, I was a champion, and I felt good, and I felt like I faced a foe, and I conquered that foe, and it was such a good feeling. My wife thought it was ridiculous that I was so proud, and I was like, I cannot wait. I'm going to do a whole segment on this. I cannot wait to tell. She's like, don't tell them. Nobody cares about this. I'm like, no, they will care. People care about people cutting in the fairy line. But lastly, and I'm going to move on because this is ridiculous. Way too long. Lastly, Washington State Ferry System, put the tattletale lines back up. You've got to. Put them back up. I need to at least believe that there's some way to exact revenge in a fair legal way when somebody cuts in. And it happens every single time that I'm sitting in that line. So they need to put those numbers back up. And if they're already up, I need to find out where they're at. That's my fault. And they need to get some more boats in that system because I can't wait 6 hours for my kids. That's insane.
Do they still have the HOV violators phone line too?
I don't know about that. I wasn't noticing that.
I bet you both of them.
Probably.
Probably
shut them all down. Yeah, probably because they don't care anymore. The HOV ones I don't care about as much. The ferry boat terminal ones, those guys can go straight to jail. All right, every single day this time we play a trivia clip. At the top of the news roundup, you guys are invited to listen, and I will tell you where this clip is from. You can also guess on the Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line. I'm going to give you that number right now. 888-973-5476. Here's the clip. Very best of luck.
He's supposed to be Turkish. Some say his father was German. Nobody ever believed he was real. Nobody ever knew him or saw anybody that ever worked directly for him. But to hear Kobayashi tell it, anybody could have worked for Soze. You never knew. That was his power. The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
All right. Good luck on that one. I think you guys are going to get it. It's a great movie. Fantastic movie. Won a bunch of Oscars. One of the best scripts ever. One of the best movies ever. I love it. All right. So take a guess on that. 888-973-5476. Very quickly, before we get to the break here, I got to tell you one quick story. We've been covering a bunch of they're Boeing flights. They're not all Boeing's fault. I understand that. But we've been covering a bunch of flights recently, like six or seven of them, that have had issues that we've been then talking about. Like almost daily, we've had a new story about some Boeing flight and it has lost something and they've had to land. Like we did a story the other day about a flight in Texas that had to,
Oregon.
Was it? Oh, yeah.
Oregon. Turn it around.
Yeah, the Oregon.
It feels like every time I get on Twitter, there's something.
Yeah, there was an Oregon one. The Oregon one was the one that everyone's been talking about. That flight that took off from Oregon 9 minutes into the flight.
Well, they have two that happened.
The door fell off.
Yeah.
And then there was the other one where the wheel fell off and they had to land it. It's happening everywhere. It's happened again. So Friday, right before the weekend, Friday, a Boeing 737-800 lost a panel, like an external panel, fell off The latest issue involving one of the manufacturer's planes. It was only discovered when it landed at the Oregon airport. This must be the one you're talking about, the Oregon one. It's run by United. United Airlines Flight 433 departed from San Francisco around 10:20 a.m. local time, landed safely at its intended destination, so that's great. It was trying to land at Rogue Valley International Airport in Medford about 70 minutes later. The missing panel was discovered only after landing. Once the plane reached the gate, an external panel was found to be missing, halting operations at the airport while a runway safety check was conducted. So obviously, they got to find the panel. There was no indication of a problem. No emergency was ever declared during the flight. That's another thing. Quick side note. If the panels on the plane are falling off along the outside, shouldn't they have some system built in where they let you know that it's falling off? I mean, I don't even know how they do that. Some laser scan or something. But if there's a panel that goes missing, I don't want to know about it. So there's 139 passengers, 6 crew members on board, according to United Airlines. Everybody was safe. Again, the plane landed without incident. They didn't even know it was missing until they got on the ground. Airport staff then searched for the missing panel all around the airport premises. They were unable to locate it. United Airlines says a thorough examination of a 20, and the plane's 25 years old, so it's not a brand new one. Like some of these other stories we've been telling you, these are like brand new delivered planes from Boeing. Recent brand new delivered planes. This one, 25 years old. So at least this one gives me a little sense of peace, knowing that this plane's really old. The new ones, I can't explain that. But this one's really old. But they said the thorough examination of the 25-year-old plane and will perform all the needed repairs before it returns to service. We'll also conduct an investigation to better understand how this damage occurred, the airline added. The Federal Aviation Administration will also investigate the incident, a spokesperson said. Boeing declined to comment when contacted by the Post. They probably are just thinking, hey, this is a United Airlines issue. As my texters have pointed out, once Boeing hands these flights over, these airplanes over to, whoever the airline is, so if it's United, if it's Alaska, whatever, now they got to take care of the plane. I understand that. The bummer is all these stories are about Boeing, which is really bad because right now, Boeing has a pretty big NTSB investigation going on about that door plug that we talked about, that one that took off from Oregon. 9 minutes into the flight, the plug just goes away, just disappears. Thankfully, that plane landed safely, but that was like a brand new plane. So why was that plug falling off? The NTSB would very much like to know. The problem, though, is that the NTSB is trying to talk to Boeing, and according to the NTSB chair, Jennifer Homendy, Boeing is not being very forthcoming.
How cooperative have the parties to the investigation been with the NTSB, and have you gotten timely access to the documents, the information, and the witnesses you need?
Boeing has not provided us with the documents and information that we have requested numerous times over the past few months, specifically with respect to opening, closing, and removal of the door and the team that does that work at the Renton facility.
I understand that this is not all Boeing's fault. I like Boeing. I love them as a company. I totally understand what they have meant to this region. But, you know, you got to answer these questions before I'm going to get on a Boeing flight. I need to know that I'm going to be safe if I'm going to fly in the, on those planes with my family, especially if I'm with my family. So, Boeing, please, just for me, would you please answer these questions? That'd be great. All right, we got a lot of stuff coming up, including, this is kind of crazy, actually. You remember that whistleblower? Not to like just be harping on Boeing the whole time, but you remember that whistleblower that committed suicide? Or at least people thought he committed suicide back in South Carolina? His name was John Barnett. We have new details about that. His friends are speaking up. They are raising some serious questions about what actually happened to him. I have some audio from one of his friends. It's pretty crazy. Stick around. I'm going to play that for you next when we get back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to the show. Hope you guys are having a nice little Monday. I hope you're enjoying it. All right, I saw this story over the weekend. I was kind of fascinated by this because I've been following it. There was a guy, his name was John Barnett. He is kind of became known back in, I think it was 2019. He did this interview with the BBC, and he became known as a whistleblower for Boeing. He spent a long time working there, saw some things he didn't think were right, and he started talking about it. And so this is, he's kind of known as the whistleblower, one of the whistleblowers, actually. And then recently, he took his own life. He died of a single gunshot wound. I'm not going to get too graphic here because this is kind of graphic, but authorities at first attributed his death to suicide. I think officially they still do. NBC News had this report when that came out. About how, we have an update on this, which is really interesting. So we'll play you that in just a second. But this is NBC News' report about his suicide when it happened.
Police in Charleston, South Carolina tell NBC News they are aware of the death of a former Boeing employee turned whistleblower. 62-year-old John Barnett found dead on Friday from what the coroner calls an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound.
So this is my retirement plaque.
Barnett retired from Boeing in 2017 after working as a quality manager for more than 30 years. Since his departure, he has taken legal action against the company, claiming he was retaliated against for raising safety issues internally, issues that Boeing denied at the time. Back in 2019, Barnett sat down with Today, describing a haphazard safety culture at Boeing.
From day one, it's just all been about schedule and hurry up and just get it done, push the planes out. We're behind schedule. You know, we don't have time to worry about issues that y'all bring up.
In 2017, the FAA released a review upholding many of Barnett's concerns.
All right, so I want to just like say one more time, I am a great fan of Boeing. There is nothing that I love more than to take my kids. I can't even count how many times that we have been to the Museum of Flight. I mean, there's also like Paul Allen. He's got this great museum. We love the aerospace industry, and it built our entire region. There is a great museum up in Everett, and I think I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's Paul Allen's museum. It is everything in there actually works, like all the tanks and everything. They have these tank days where you can go and you can watch, and they have all these tanks. They fly the planes. They take off. I mean, it's like it's an amazing museum, but Boeing needs to figure out what's going on. They've had some issues. And so you have some of these guys who have internal knowledge and they are whistleblowing. This guy took his own life, or so it was reported. And now this is the part that is really odd. His friends are now speaking out and they were saying, listen, we know this guy. We know what kind of a man he was. We know what he was looking forward to in life. He was still taking part in this investigation. He was still testifying against the company, and they didn't think that he took his own life. ABC4 talked with one of his friends, and she uses, I guess she's anonymous in this. I think they call her Jennifer, but I don't think that's her real name. But ABC4, this is in South Carolina. They spoke to one of his friends, and she has this to say.
He said, but if anything happens to me, it's not suicide.
Listen to this report. This is pretty crazy.
Barnett's family friend Jennifer said they had talked about this exact scenario playing out, but his words seemed like a premonition. He told her, don't ever believe it.
I knew John because his mom and my mom are best friends. And so over the years, get-togethers, birthdays, celebrations, and, you know, whatnot, we've all got together and talked and, you know, that's how we really know each other.
And when Jennifer needed help one day, Barnett came by to see her. They talked about his upcoming depositions in Charleston. Jennifer knew he filed an extremely damaging complaint against Boeing. He says the aerospace giant retaliated against him when he blew the whistle on unsafe practices. For more than 30 years, Barnett was a quality manager. He'd recently retired and moved back to look after his mom in Louisiana.
He wasn't concerned about safety because I asked him, I said, aren't you scared? And he said, and his voice and the way he would talk, no, I ain't scared. He said, but if anything happens to me, it's not suicide. You know, I know that he did not commit suicide. There's no way. He loved life too much. He loved his family too much. He loved his brothers too much to put them through what they're going through.
I'm going to pause it here real fast. Again, this is just this family friend's claims. They don't have any new evidence that they are at least releasing, but they are taking this seriously enough that I guess they are looking into it a little bit more. ABC4 in South Carolina did speak with this woman. She doesn't sound crazy to me. I can also understand how somebody doesn't want to believe that somebody in their family could do something like this. Now, he's not in her family, but somebody who's close to them could do something like this. People are going through a lot of stuff that they don't share. And I imagine this guy was under immense pressure because he's part of this, you know, case. And I'm sure in an area like South Carolina, he's not the most popular guy either. But when somebody comes forward and says, like, you know, I mean, that was my first thought when this guy, when it was reported that he had committed suicide. I thought to myself, like, man, that timing of that seems kind of crazy.
Sounds like something like the Mafia.
Doesn't it sound yeah. exactly like the plot of a movie?
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like...
How many people think Jeffrey Epstein killed himself, too, you know?
There you go. There's another great question. Max is making a good addition to the show. But she goes on.
I know.
And he basically told you not to believe it.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Not true. He's got too much to do. Likes breathing. And he did. He had a lot of plans and things that he wanted to do.
What do you think happened?
I think somebody got in there and made, you know, money can buy anything nowadays, it seems like. And there's a lot of evil in this world. I think somebody didn't like what he had to say and wanted to shut him up and didn't want it to come back on anyone. So that's why they made it look like a suicide.
The last time she saw Barnett, it was at her father's funeral in late February. He was one of the pallbearers. Sometimes family and friends refer to him by his middle name, Mitch.
I think everybody is in disbelief and can't believe it. And I told everybody that I don't care what they say, I know that Mitch didn't do that.
And just because John Mitch Barnett is dead doesn't mean this case won't move forward. His attorneys say they're still prepared to go to trial in June.
That story is definitely not over. I think we're going to hear a lot more about that. I mean, the timing on that is so bizarre to me. Days before he's supposed to testify, he ends up dead in his truck. And from what I have heard from his various families and like things I've read about him, he didn't sound like a guy who was on the way out. I guess it's always a shock, though. I mean, obviously, you can't be inside his head. You don't know what his thoughts are. You don't know what he feels like he's going through or the pressures he's up against. But I do think it is very interesting that people who knew him said, nope. And the fact that he had that, if that is true, if he really did have that conversation with her and said, if anything happens to me, it's not suicide. I mean, that is scary stuff. All right, we got a lot more coming up next, including, this is kind of a bizarre story. If you're a fan of porn, and you're in Texas, then you're not going to be having a very good day. Texas got rid of some porn sites that you might be on. And maybe that's a good thing. All right, we got a lot more coming up. Stick around. We're going to be back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Max Strobel is filling in for Matty B tonight, Matt's. You've got an interesting pick of bumper music. It's kind of like a slow and sexier feel.
My feeling was, if we're going to do Cairo Nights, I think nighttime music is like, yeah, a little yeah. jazzier.
It's like kind of jazzier.
Funkier.
Just a sexier
sultry.
Experience.
Yeah.
That's actually really good timing because we're going to talk about porn. So bad news if you love porn and you live in Texas.
Sinner.
Listen to this. This is kind of interesting. I thought Texas just passed this bill. It's called House Bill 1181, and basically it's just this age verification thing. The law went into effect on September 1st. It requires commercial websites that publish sexually explicit or pornographic material just to verify that users are 18 or older. That's all it does. Just verify that they're 18. So websites must ask, I'm reading from a story on this, websites must ask for government-issued identification and digital identification or transactional data from online visitors to make sure that minors are not on the site. These are all just like good things to do. So you don't have little kids downloading porn and, you know, seeing stuff that they shouldn't be seeing. So the bill was signed into law in June. Let's see how they do this. It asks websites to show here's a few things that it asks the websites to do. If you want to be in Texas and you want to, you know, cast a net to catch people in your porn net, it asks you to do these things. Show a substance abuse hotline and mental health helpline phone number on your site. It requires 3 14-point or larger notices that state the following. Three things. One, it has to say pornography is potentially biologically addictive, is proven to harm human brain development, desensitizes brain reward circuits, increases conditioned responses, and weakens brain function. Two, exposure to this content is associated with low self-esteem and body image. All these things are true, by the way. Eating disorders, impaired brain development, and other emotional and mental illnesses. And three, pornography increases the demand for prostitution, child exploitation, and child pornography. So companies who refuse to do this, according to this new law, can be fined up to $10,000 per day. The fine applies per instance if the company retains identifying information. If one minor is exposed to porn tied to the company's lack of compliance with the law, the fine can go up to $250,000. So they're not joking around here. This is very serious. They want porn companies to know we're not kidding. And so in Texas, Pornhub, which is probably, I mean, I haven't done the research on this, but I would imagine that Pornhub is probably one of the more visited pornography websites.
They got it right in their name.
There it is. It's a hub for porn. So Pornhub is a place where people can post porn, I guess, like amateur porn. You can post whatever there. And so, I mean, I'm sure they have some rules, but it's pornography. But in Texas, they have just disabled access to their website. So if you are in Texas and you want to look at porn on Pornhub, you no longer can.
Sinner.
This is what the Texas Attorney General said. He just posted this on X. He said, Pornhub has now disabled its website in Texas. Sites like Pornhub are on the run because Texas has a law that aims to prevent them from showing harmful, obscene material to children. We recently secured a major victory against Pornhub and other sites that sought to block this law from taking effect. In Texas, companies cannot get away with showing porn to children if they don't want to comply. Good riddance. I think this is a great idea. I don't even understand what's controversial about this at all. You are not allowed to look at porn. You're not allowed to buy porn. You can't go into a shop if you're 13 and buy a dirty magazine. And so why should you be able to access these things online? They have age verification things all the time. I can't go online without, I can't look up almost anything online without having to like make sure that I'm not a bot. This happens all the time. I like have to pick stop signs and crosswalks and things like that. Not for porn, but for like just almost any site you go on now, they're like, are you a bot? We want to make sure you're a real person. So the technology is there. It's easily available. For me, the only reason why a company wouldn't want to comply with this is because it's going to cost them money. Why else wouldn't they comply with this?
Yeah, they can't risk. They just can't risk it because it's for 10,000 each instance.
10,000 each instance, and then it can go up to 250,000 if a kid gets access to it.
Per day.
Yeah, per day. So Pornhub has pulled out. They said, no thanks, we're not going to be in Texas. Speaking of porn, I have two porn stories for you, actually. Are you guys racing fans? The winning Daytona motorcycle racing team is now sponsored by OnlyFans. The subscription platform known best for its, again, pornographic images. It's like OnlyFans and Pornhub are probably two of the top, I don't know, top porn sites, I would guess.
Yeah.
So during last, I think this is like 2 weeks ago, there was a Daytona 200, which is a motorcycle race. Josh Herron won. This is what that sounded like.
And now for Josh Herron, the number two, he wins again at the Daytona 200 and takes the checkered flag. Jubilation from the Warhorse HSBK Racing Ducati team.
So they were the HSBK Warhorse Racing. It's a U.S. racing team backed by Ducati, which is a fantastic motorcycle. And now they've announced that their new sponsor with like, you know, big giant sponsorship is OnlyFans. And so when they cross that finish line, they've got the OnlyFans, you know, logo on their all their stuff. Do I care about that? No, not specifically, if I'm being completely honest. I mean, they're not showing pornography to kids in the race. They're just, it's a logo if somebody wants to advertise. We have beer advertisers. You have to be 21 to buy alcohol. I don't have a problem with people putting Budweiser on, you know, race boats or motorcycles or NASCAR. Big deal. It's a different thing with the age verification, I think. I think they should have to age verify in Texas. And so, good for Texas for planting that flag and saying, hey, you guys have to do this. And if you don't want to do it, you don't have to do business in Texas. This is kind of funny, though. The motorcycle rider who won the Daytona 200, he was saying how excited he was. They had this big announcement that OnlyFans was sponsoring this. And this is, you know, this is comes with the territory, I guess. It's not like the super classiest sponsor, possibly. And so he was saying, hey, I think it's an amazing opportunity. It's so cool. This is now the second company that I brought in as a title sponsor. He's standing in front of this big crowd, and he's making this announcement. And then somebody in the crowd yells at him. They say, take your shirt off, as he's making this fun announcement. I guess, whatever. He doesn't care. He won the Daytona 200, which I guess is a big deal in motorcycle racing. So good for him. And so those are two stories about porn. I hope you enjoyed them. We got a lot more coming up on the show. I'm going to give you the answer to that trivia question next at the start of the next hour in the news roundup. Stick around for that. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.